Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am an editor here at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as usual, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Greed is good.
Okay, then.
That's a Wall Street reference, the sequel of which will be coming out in theaters soon.
Wow, really?
Yeah. There's a sequel to Wall Street. Yeah. Yeah, it's got Shia LaBeouf in it. Anyway, so that the reason I said greed is good is because we're going to talk about currency.
Yes, we are.
The tech of making money.
Yes.
What it requires to get that cash in your hot little hands. But before we get into that, I thought I'd talk a little bit about the history of currency. This is kind of a stuff you miss in history class mini section.
Okay.
What we should do is get Liz to play the first few notes of the stuff you missed in history class theme. So we'll wait. Hi, this is Jonathan, not Katie. Or Sarah. I am not nearly as articulate or pretty as either of them. And I have far less hair on my head. So we want to talk about the history of currency. So the first coins, okay, back before there were coins, you know, essentially everything was based upon bartering.
Right. And then there was salt.
Yeah. Well, again, that's also a kind of currency.
True.
But before coins, yeah, there were some things that would represent wealth.
Right.
And could be used in currency. Cocoa beans also were used as currency at one point to help balance out trade systems. Mm-hmm. But really, you know, you got to this point where it just became really difficult to trade stuff for other stuff.
Right.
So that's when people started coming up with this idea of currency. It's something that represents the purchasing power so that you can get hold of something else. That person can then use that same currency to go and purchase stuff that they need.
Okay.
It's a brilliant system. Because it's way more portable than carrying a cow and three chickens with you whenever you want to go and buy some wheat.
Niall Ferguson, you're not.
Yeah, bite me. So anyway, let's go back to Lydia. Oh, okay. Lydia, that encyclopedia. Lydia, which was an empire that was, where modern-day Turkey is now. There was a Lydian king who decided to start making coins. Do you know this guy's name?
No.
Yes, you do. You just don't know who it is. It's Croesus.
Oh, yes, Croesus.
Yes, to be rich as Croesus. Well, the reason we say rich as Croesus is because Croesus is the guy who came up with this idea of stamping coins with an imperial emblem on them.
They weren't known as Croesus pieces, were they?
You know what, folks? If you could have seen his face leading up to that, I could tell that he had something. And I almost wish I had not paused for breath. Croesus came up with this idea of stamping metal ingots to create coins. And this is around 640 BC.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where the idea came from. Now, the idea for a currency, as in paper notes, that came later.
Much later.
Because, I mean, who the heck trusts paper, right? Chinese did. The Chinese came up with the idea for paper notes well before anyone else did.
You bring up a good point.
Please.
Trust.
Trust is very important.
Yes, it's all about trust.
Currency is based upon trust. Mm-hmm. In the United States, until 1971, that trust was that the piece of paper or the coin that you held represented a certain amount of gold.
Right.
And that, in theory, you could go to the U.S. government and exchange your currency for the equivalent value of equivalent amount of gold that would be the same as the value of the currency you were handing over.
Right. So you're giving them a piece of paper with Benjamin Franklin's picture on it,
and they
they're going to give you gold in return.
$100 worth of gold.
Exactly.
Yeah, since it's a Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's all about the Benjamins, baby. But in 1971, the U.S. decided to abandon the gold standard.
That's right.
It really wasn't practical. I mean, it reached a point where if everyone turned in their currency, there would not be enough gold to support that.
Mm-hmm.
There's not enough gold in the reserves to support the currency. So now, currency is kind of, the trust is based upon a group hallucination that the money is actually worth something.
I feel so much better now.
Yeah. I was speaking to our producer, Tyler, and we came to the conclusion that our trust in the system of money is equivalent to Wile E. Coyote running off the edge of the cliff before he's noticed that there's nothing under him.
You know, he never studied law.
Right. So if we ever notice that money's not really based on anything, there'll be panic and we'll all not be able to buy anything. So just let's continue the group hallucination, please, because I got bills to pay, y'all. So really, money is just representing buying power.
Yeah,
how much buying power you have. And we wanted to talk about the tech of making money. And before we get into the actual tech of it, one other thing I wanted to point out is that you can't solve money problems just by printing more currency.
Nope.
That's not how it works.
Nope.
First of all, you have to find a way of getting currency into circulation.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't just print money. I mean, what are you going to do? Give it out to people for free? That doesn't work either, because that causes inflation. Because now money has been devalued. It's not worth what used to be worth. And so now you have to have more money to buy the same things that you needed before.
Right.
The way that wealth is generated, the way money is actually created, is through loans.
Mm-hmm.
This is getting really technical, but when you take out a loan, you're charged interest,
mm-hmm.
which means ultimately you're paying back more money than what you got in the first place.
Yes.
That's what's generating the money that is coming out of the, you know, while you can print as much money as you want, to get into circulation, you have to have the loan system there.
Right.
Yeah. Also was not very big in the Bible. But at any rate, let's get into the tech of making money. And I wanted to start with coins.
Yeah, some of the tech that they use to make money is actually very, very old.
Yeah.
Some of it has been around for centuries.
And it requires a level of artistry that is phenomenal.
No, I know. And this is one of those things that anytime it comes on one of the channels that make up our parent company, one of the Discovery channels, and I've seen a couple specials on how they make money and how they make the stuff behind money, as in the paper and all the things that become money.
Right,
just
right.
Fascinating
the
stuff
metal
to me.
Stuff and
yeah.
everything. Yeah,
alloys and all that.
Yeah, if we're going with coins, we're going to stick mainly to the United States, I think, mostly because, I mean, that's where we live, so it's the information that's easiest for us to access.
Yeah.
But really, most of these processes are similar throughout the world. They may not be using exactly the same kinds of machines, but they're using a very similar process.
Yeah.
So to make a coin, it's a fairly complex process. The first thing you're going to need... Well, there's two main things you're going to need. You're going to need a die.
Yes.
Actually, a pair of die.
Mm-hmm.
Not like dice, like six-sided dice. Not that kind of die.
I was going to say, come on, Big Seven.
Kind of like a stamp.
Yes.
Okay. You're going to need a really, really high-quality stamp.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to need metal.
Yes.
So with designing the stamp, I guess we can start with that because that's really the basis of all the coins that we create.
There's a lot of newer tech involved in creating the stamp these days because in earlier times you would have to have the designer actually do this by hand, make the design by hand first. And computers can be used to do that, although not always.
Yeah. In general, if you're doing it the old way, mm-hmm. let's say, you get, and the old way being not that old, just so you know, because, I mean, the old way is that you would develop a stamp and you would use a hammer and anvil to create these things, but that's getting a little too old.
Right.
The modern era of making currency, you have an engraver who designs the coin to very specific standards.
Yes.
You know, so this is the engraver has to design the coin. The design has to be approved before anything else can happen. And then, assuming that you're using the old method where you're not digitally modeling stuff, mm-hmm. the engraver would use clay or some other modeling material to build the first model of the coin, which is going to be much larger than the eventual actual coin will be.
Right.
From that mold, from that model, rather, you create a mold using something like plastiline. And then you pour plaster of Paris into that. And this is able – the reason we use plaster of Paris is because it can pick up details, really fine details, and represent them accurately.
Mm-hmm.
So now you've got a plaster model of the coin. And then from that, you have a machine that creates a copper mold of it called a galvano.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I didn't have that.
Yeah. And then you make an even smaller model of it. It's called a hub, and this is made out of steel. And then the master hub is called the die. So you have a steel die that looks exactly the way your coin's going to look, but kind of in reverse because it's a stamp.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have two of those because you have to have one for the front and one for the back. And so that's how you create your stamp. There's actually even more involved in that. I mean, there's this whole polishing section that has to go through. By the time that the steel die is ready to be used, it has a mirror-like finish because it's been polished so finely.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So that's your stamping stuff. Now you got to have something to stamp.
Right.
Now, in the United States... it's a mixture of copper and nickel, mainly. Although you also have zinc-plated copper. You have or copper-plated zinc, rather, not the other way around. But mm-hmm. why would you have zinc-plated copper? That would be unusual. And we haven't always used the exact same metals and alloys throughout the history of currency. You can find some interesting facts about the various metals that have been used, and in most cases it tends to be something like war broke out and suddenly we didn't have access to all the metals that we used to use for coins.
As a matter of fact, my father, who was in World War II, has a box of steel pennies.
Yeah.
Because during World War II they used steel to make pennies instead of copper for reasons of the war effort, and so I have a whole bunch of those, and they're worth, you know, about a penny.
Nice.
Well, to the government, they are worth exactly what they're worth. So
yeah.
You could have a collectible coin which would be worth a lot of money to a collector. You take it to the government, it's worth exactly, you know, it's just like stamps are.
Right.
Stamps are worth, you know, if you put a very, very rare, you know, say you put an inverted Jenny
right.
on an envelope, it's worth exactly to the post office, you know, postage. You'd still have to add postage to it.
Right.
To
yeah.
Mail
you might
it
be able to sell it, you might be able to sell it to a collector for thousands of dollars.
Exactly.
But the government's going to take it at face value.
Yes, exactly. And that's, again, that goes back to our trust thing. Anyway, so yeah.
All right. So
steel
we,
pennies.
Yeah. So let's talk about the metal. You get these, you get melt big bars of metal, you melt them down in a furnace, you pour them into to ingot forms, and then
ingot
yes,
I like that word,
and you cool that down. You use water, by the way, to cool it, and then it actually uses a couple of different cooling systems, and then you take that to a rolling mill, which is going to turn it into flat sheets.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now the U.S. Mint pretty much gets these flat sheets in coils.
Yes,
and
they do.
They feed the coil. Coils are, let's see, I've actually got the stats here. Mm-hmm. A foot wide, 1,500 feet long, about as thick as the final coin tends to be, and it weighs about 6,000 pounds.
Yes, yes. Actually, there are some great photos of this, along with a lot more detail than we'll probably get into in the podcast at usmint.gov.
Yes.
Awesome details, and then photos are, you know, because you could see these huge coils of metal,
right?
Which are pretty awesome.
It's pretty intimidating, really, because you think, "Wow, that's a lot of metal."
Mm-hmm.
Now, these strips, these coils, get fed through a machine called a blanking presser.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the blanking presser, essentially, what that does is it cuts the metal sheets into the coin shape.
Yes.
It actually cuts them into slightly larger diameter than the way the coin will eventually appear, because it has to create a little extra metal on the edges to create a rim.
Mm-hmm.
So you put it through the blanking presser, and you get the blanks. That's what the unmarked flat discs of metal are called.
Mm-hmm.
You get the blanks. You then have to soften them.
Yes.
Which you do by putting them into a furnace. The furnace is about 700 degrees Celsius or so.
Mm-hmm.
This softens them a little bit. Then you have to cool them and clean them. And it's a process that actually uses various chemicals to clean them. You're not just, you know, putting them through a washing machine. Although, it's in a machine that does look like a washing machine. It does spin them.
That's not necessarily true for everything, because the golden dollars go through
true.
A slightly different process.
Yeah.
In which they use steel shot to burnish the metal.
Kind of like BBs.
Yeah, a little bit like BBs.
You put it in there, and that way it polishes them through brute force.
Yeah. Yeah.
The spinny thing. Did you happen to see what that's called?
The spinny thing.
Well, did you see what it's called?
No.
It's the whirl-away.
Oh, yes.
So spinny thing is not that big a leap from the technical term of the whirl-away.
That's true. Actually, it sounds like something you'd see at the local carnival at your shopping mall that sets up, and you're going, I'm not sure I want to ride that thing.
Yeah, and
get on the whirl-away.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll polish away your impurities.
And we'll also take your money. So you then once you've cleaned and dried the coins,
mm-hmm.
They move to a thing called the upsetting mill.
Yes,
it's very upsetting.
I was going to say I'm sure they feel terrible after that.
Right. So this is the thing that creates the rim around the edge of the coin,
mm-hmm.
and so once the upsetting mill is done, the coin should be the right diameter.
Right.
It should be the same size that it's going to be once it's stamped.
Yep.
And
it's done for a very important reason. It helps, and you know, by raising the rim, it helps them stack the coins a little bit better. You'll notice that it's got sort of a firm edge around it. Also helps keep the coins from eroding.
Right.
And that's because that's one of the benefits of using coins. One of the reasons the United States government is pushing the golden dollars so much is they last a whole lot longer than paper money.
Yeah, you don't have to keep making as much.
Yes.
You can make it as circulation requires, but you don't have to worry about, you know, the useful life of a dollar might be a decade, but the useful life of a coin is
could be longer.
Could be
than that.
Really long time.
Actually, I don't think paper money.
No, it's not even a decade.
No,
I just used that as I just
right.
pulled that out of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah. But
so
somebody would write in and say, "No, it's
someone
more like
has
a
paused
year,
the podcast
years.
Already."
I'm sure,
and they have written in and to you. Sir or madam, I would like to say, please listen to the show all the way through before you write us, because sometimes we correct ourselves. Not often, I will grant you, but sometimes. So at any rate, the next stage is where they might have to well, I guess the coining is the next stage, depending
right.
on whether or not you need to put ridges on the edge.
Right. The reeds?
The reeds, yes.
Reading.
Yes. Reading.
Reading is fundamental. Well, at least for, you know,
especially if you need
dimes
R-E-E-D.
Or quarters.
But
yes, it's R-E-E-D-I-N-G.
Right. And then it would be coining. So I'm glad that you brought that up because I almost totally forgot. And this is where we add the actual design of the coin to the blank, which now, by the way, is no longer called a blank.
Yes.
Once you've added the rim, it's become a new thing called the planchette.
Yes. No relation to Kate.
Yeah. Thanks. Planchette with a P. As in poppies. And
it'll make you sleep.
Yes. So once you get to the coining, this is where those die that we talked about the mm-hmm. come in. And you've got – they usually refer to the die in two different terms,
right.
which are very simple. You got the anvil and the hammer.
Huh.
The anvil is going to remain stationary. The hammer is going to strike the coin, which is resting on the anvil. And the force of the impact is going to stamp that design on the planchette
mm-hmm.
and make
mm-hmm.
it a coin.
Right. And, yeah, it resembles a hammer and an anvil in function more so than form. Because, I mean, you wouldn't recognize it as a hammer and an anvil in the, you know, Looney Tunes sense
right.
of something dropping on your head. Although I wouldn't want either one of those to drop on my head.
I also would not want those to drop on your head.
But, yeah, after they become coins, of course they go to a bin where they are inspected. Somebody takes a look at them, makes sure that they are okay. And I mean, anything that's not acceptable goes back for recycling. As is the webbing for when they make the blanks.
Yeah,
the metal that they can't use that's
right.
around it that gets recycled as well.
Right. All the webbing is the excess metal after the stamping process. So, 'cause of course, if you stamp a bunch of circular things out of a sheet of metal, you're going to be left with excess pieces.
Yeah, and a bit of metal
right.
left over.
So that all gets melted down and recycled, as do any irregular coins.
Mm-hmm.
The first irregular coins, before you melt them down, they have to be destroyed, or they have to be marred so that it's clear that they are not valid currency.
Right.
To do so, they put them in special machines called wafflers.
Mm.
I love the technology jargon of making currency.
Rollaways
and wafflers. Man, it sounds like a county fair.
I know.
It's a county fair where all the prizes are money. Sign me up. So, yeah, these actually use high-pressure rollers to kind of put a predetermined pattern, a ridged pattern across
yeah.
the coin that automatically marks them as being not viable.
Yes.
And then they get sent to the recycling furnace. And then the coins that are actually acceptable, they fall into a box called a trap. Now, this part I don't like. I don't want to fall into a trap at my Whirlaway Waffler Fair.
I'm just waiting for you to do it.
To fall into a trap?
No, to bring
Admiral Akbar into
yes.
it?
Yes.
It's a trap! Nothing can penetrate the shields. That was terrible. That was like the world's worst Admiral Akbar accent. Please don't write me. Remember what I said about pausing the podcast. I have a quick thing of trivia before we move on to currency.
Okay.
Or to paper money.
Currency, yes.
Paper money. Do you know why, out of all the coins in that are in United States circulation, why the penny and nickel are the only ones to have images that don't face to the left?
No, why?
Well, shucks, I was kind of hoping you knew. That's going to make this weird. No, okay. So there are a lot of different theories. You know, so the penny, of course, has a Lincoln
mm-hmm.
there, and the nickel has a Jefferson.
Yes.
Has nothing to do with who they are beyond a very simple point. So the Abraham Lincoln penny was minted back in 1908, and it was to commemorate the 100-year anniversary of Lincoln's birth.
Yes.
Theodore Roosevelt, who was president at the time, chose a sculptor named Victor David Brenner to design the penny. Now, Brenner had created a bust of a plaque, really, not a bust, but a plaque of Lincoln that had him facing to the right. It was based off a photo of Lincoln where Lincoln was facing to the right.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason why the penny, Lincoln faces to the right. It's not, there's no conspiracy or weird philosophical thing about it. It's because the photo that was used to create a plaque that was in turn used to create the portrait in the penny, Lincoln was facing to the right.
All right.
Now, Jefferson is a little weird. He started facing out on the left back in 1938.
Mm-hmm.
2003, he decided to look around.
He did.
No, he didn't. He was in no position at that point. But the president had enacted a law to revise the nickel, and this was to commemorate the bicentenary of Lewis and Clark.
Oh.
Which makes perfect sense, right?
Yes.
If you're going to celebrate Lewis and Clark, why not change the nickel?
Well, you know, he was the guy who sent them out there.
Yeah. Yeah. So the U.S. Mint decided to make a series of nickels.
Yes.
So it's not just one. So 2004 series, Jefferson was facing to the left, right? And the reverse of the nickel was changed.
Right.
On 2005, Jefferson's facing to the right.
Mm-hmm.
And the word Liberty is engraved next to him. It's based off of Jefferson's handwriting.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2006, he's facing forward. It's based off a portrait that was done by Rembrandt Peale. So this and it also was the first coin in U.S. circulation, actual official U.S. coin, where it did not feature the person on the coin depicted in profile.
Right.
So there you go. That's your trivia.
All right.
There's no weird conspiracy thing behind any of it. It's just a, you know, just like anything in the government tends to have a pretty mundane explanation at the end of it. But let's get on to paper money.
Yeah, while the mint works on the coins, we've got a lot of people working on paper money, including the Federal Reserve Board, the Bureau of Engraving and Printing, and the U.S. Secret Service are all working on the tech of paper money. And, you know, paper money, you would figure, has quite a bit of security risk involved because, I mean, shouldn't you be able to throw a whole bunch of dollar bills on a photocopying machine and have the ability to print as many copies as you want? Well, it doesn't quite work that way, but paper money is a lot easier to copy, I would assume, than a coin, which you would actually have to mint.
Right. Yeah. It, on the face of it, it is much simpler to make the copy.
I can't make heads or tails of it.
Right. So in order to make it more difficult, you have to come up with various schemes to create a secure paper money currency. And so in the United States, they've used lots and lots of different techniques.
Mm-hmm.
For one, it's printed on special paper.
Yes, that's one of those things that you would say is very non-technical, but I would beg to differ because the paper is a certain composition. It's got to have certain types of red and blue threads that mm-hmm. go through it now. And it comes from a supplier, a particular supplier who's been doing it for a very, very long time.
And it's got a little bit of linen in it, too.
Yeah, it's made from cotton and linen, not wood.
Yeah. So it's got a very particular feel. And if mm-hmm. you pick up a counterfeit dollar, there's a good chance that if it's not made on the same sort of stuff, you would tell almost immediately, like, well, this is the wrong weight and texture for a dollar. This doesn't feel right.
Mm-hmm.
So there's one thing. You've got your base material, which is a little different. You've mm-hmm. then got the various dyes of ink, where it's in the old dollars, it was, you know, like this greenish ink where that was kind of hard to replicate. It's even more difficult now because mm-hmm. now they use inks that are have sort of a photoreactive, almost a photoreactive kind of element to them, in that if you tilt the dollar bill a certain way, the color changes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's because the special inks that they're using, again, it's hard to replicate that, so it's an anti-counterfeiting measure. And I'm talking specifically about the inks that are used to print, like the dollar amount, as opposed to the color of the paper itself. The U.S. government will tell you that basing a decision on whether a bill is counterfeit or not based solely upon the color of the bill is a bad idea.
Yes.
'Cause that can at least be simulated somewhat easily.
Mm-hmm.
But another very simple way, really, a very elegant way that the money is got an anti-counterfeit measure on it is that it uses lots of really tiny writing.
Yes, it does. Microprinting.
Microprinting and tiny line patterns throughout the bill, mm-hmm. which are very difficult to get a high resolution picture of. You know, most especially earlier in the days of printing money, it was very hard to get an accurate simulation of those. You pretty much would need to get hold of the original plates, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because those it's so tiny that it was very difficult to make a simulation.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the circular lines around the portrait sort of create this, you know, moiré effect where if you tried to stick it on a photocopier machine, that it would give you a very blurry appearance because, I mean, that's the whole point of the microprinting and the lines is that if you try to use modern technology, like a simple way like that, without trying to make plates yourself and you're just trying to scan a copy on your computer scanner or using a photocopier, it's going to be so blurry that it will become obvious to somebody you try to pass that bill to that it's not real.
Right. So let's talk a little bit briefly, and then I think we'll finish up with kind of some of the new designs that are going to be on the $100 bill that come out in 2011. Let's talk a little bit about what they're actually doing to make this money. Mm-hmm. They're using the intaglio printing method.
I thought that was intaglio.
No, intaglio.
Okay.
I listened.
The Italian G always fools me.
Yeah. Well, it may be in Italy it's pronounced that way, but darn it, here in the South we're calling it intaglio. Anyway, you have an engraver, just like mm-hmm. it with the coins, who creates an original steel plate. And mm-hmm. this can have very, very fine detail on it. And then you put the plates into the printing press. You coat the plates with the correct ink. Mm-hmm. You then wipe the excess ink off the plates so that the only ink still on the plates is collected in the little grooves.
Yes.
And then you run the paper through the printing press, and the press goes up and down, pressing against the paper very, very rapidly. And it actually creates little raised elements on the bill because that's what get pushed up into the grooves and then coated with the ink.
Right. At 7,500 to 15,000 pounds per square inch. It is going to be embossing that paper.
Yes. Again, and this is another thing that helps you detect if it's a counterfeit bill. You mm-hmm. run your finger across the bill, and if you don't feel that texture, that difference in, I mean, it's a tiny, tiny difference in height, but we can feel that. If it feels perfectly smooth, then you're thinking, something's a little hinky here. That's a technical term.
That's right.
And also, not everything is printed on the bill when it runs through that first printing run. And they have to print one side and then let it dry and then print the other side. Mm-hmm. You can't print both at the same time. But like the Treasury seal, the Federal Reserve seal, and the serial numbers are not printed during this process.
That's right.
Which makes sense because, I mean, you couldn't put the serial number on the master steel plate because they would all have the same serial number, thus negating the whole purpose of it in the first place.
Yeah, that's also another sign. If you have a bunch of bills that all have the same serial number,
chances are those might be hinky. So, yeah, you have to run them through printing at least three times, mm-hmm. once for the front, once for the back, and then again to put the extra stuff added. Mm-hmm. And depending upon the complexity of the bill, it may be another printing run because you're talking about using different dyes, you're using the special photoreflective dyes, that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. Or dyes that show up when you put them under an ultraviolet light, that kind of thing. So let's talk – I'm sorry.
I was going to say that the way they do the ink now, it's got metallic flakes in it, which
yes.
appear because of the light diffraction and changing the wavelength depending on the metallic flakes' position. It makes it appear green at some angles and black at others.
Right.
Which is an effect very hard to duplicate unless you have the exclusive ink used by the Bureau of Engraving and Printing.
Right. Yeah, kind of hard to get your hands on, as it turns out.
Yes.
It's kind of the whole idea behind it. Mm-hmm. So, now, in 2003, that's when the United States government started to redesign currency. Mm-hmm. And the first bill was the $20 bill to get the new redesign. And that's when we started seeing some of these elements, these more advanced anti-counterfeiting measures added in, where, you know, that's where everyone's like, hey, this bill looks weird because now there's this kind of peach coloration and the, mm-hmm. the dye doesn't look exactly the same. Well, that was all to kind of help with the whole anti-counterfeiting movement.
Yeah, that new bill launched on October 9th, 2003, and it also had another security feature in it.
What's that?
If I'm not mistaken, that was the first one to have the ribbon.
Yes, where it has the
security thread.
Yes, the security thread, which, and again, if the security thread is not in the bill, then that's a sign of counterfeit.
Yep. And I remember people doing that, specifically snipping. It's like, look, it's got a security thread, and they'd snip, you know, just the end of the bill, and they'd pull it out to show that it was intact. I'm like, yeah, but now it no longer has a security thread.
You're going to have to spend that someplace where people aren't paying attention.
Yes. Because people do pay attention.
That's the whole point. Yeah, that's one of the advantages of having paper currency is that if you want to redesign your currency, you don't have to wait forever for the old currency to wear out. It's going to do that on its own just through use,
yes,
just through being handled.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually the older bills, which, you know, are still legal tender, will be so worn that they'll just get cycled out of currency.
Mm-hmm.
And banks will do it too. I mean, like, you essentially exchange the old bills for new ones and you destroy the old ones.
Yes, and you can buy a bag of shredded money from the government.
Yeah, they'll be happy to sell it to you.
Yeah.
Who'd actual money. Yes. Yeah. I'm not
Here's
even going to go there.
$50,000.
Confetti for my party. And the new $100 bill is going to have some pretty cool stuff in it too. It's got, you know, you got like the watermark, you've got the special die, you have a 3D ribbon in there.
Yeah, the new bill is going into circulation in February of next year, which for us now at the moment we are recording it is 2011, and it's
2011 is when it comes out. We're recording in 2010. Just in case you
I'm
unable to follow Mr. Paulette's syntax.
Yeah, I'm not able to follow it. I'm trying to wean myself from coffee. So it's got a brand new security thread, which is a lot more obvious than the old one. And you can learn more about this at newmoney.gov, but we can go through some of the details.
Yeah, you can see on it, it has some Liberty Bells and the 100 as the denomination of the bill on there. And when you tilt it, they seem to move around. They're using kind of this weird little holographic kind of effect. And you might be wondering how they do this.
So are we.
Yeah, as it turns out, they are being fairly secretive about the whole process, I guess mainly because they don't want people making them themselves. But at any rate, it's really hard to find out exactly the techniques they're using. Now, we could make some guesses, but we are currently running up to almost 35 minutes in length on this show. So I'm thinking that we're going to have to not guess now.
But the other major new security feature is the bell and the inkwell.
Yes.
There's an inkwell and a bell, Liberty Bell, printed on it. And I think it's a Liberty Bell. It looked like one to me.
Yeah, yeah.
And at one angle, this is again a trick of light diffraction. At one angle, they both look copper. But if, as you move the bill and change the direction, the bell appears to change to a green color.
Yeah.
And part of the reason they have added these new, particularly new security features is to also help make these new bills detectable if you're in a low light situation, which was not always the case. It's not always easy, like in a poorly lit restaurant, to figure out whether you have the money without holding the bill up to the light, which is not necessarily convenient. So it's hard to tell a counterfeit bill when you're taking somebody's money at the table.
Right. Or say at a toll booth where it's the middle of the night and someone's going through a toll booth and using a large bill and expecting lots of change back.
Yes.
I'm not saying that that's a place where people try and pass off a lot of counterfeit money. I'm just saying that's a place where people try and pass off a lot of counterfeit money.
Okay.
Okay.
I had no idea.
Well, you know, you watch enough movies or you have a relative who's in the police force. You find these things out. So we're going to wrap this up because we have gone on and on and on about this. Like I said, I find this really fascinating. And with the $100 bill coming out, that's going to be the most technologically advanced dollar that we've ever seen. Also, just in case you were wondering, the $100 bill is the highest denomination that they currently print now.
Although they have printed higher denominations in the past, and those are no longer being introduced.
Yeah, because we can do electronic transfers now. So we don't need those higher denominations the way we used to. Do you know what the highest was?
Oh, I can't remember.
100 grand.
Okay.
And
I was going to say 100,000, but
and
I,
do you know who is on it?
No.
Woodrow Wilson. There's some trivia for you.
You know, I looked that up a long time ago, probably like a year and a half ago, and it was just fascinating, but I I didn't look it up again for the podcast.
So, yeah, you guys who play bar trivia, if you're ever asked what was the highest denomination bill ever printed in the United States, it was $100,000, and Woodrow Wilson was on it.
Although somebody did try to pass a $1 million bill at a Walmart
that
had this Statue of Liberty. Okay, I'm just saying.
Dude, no.
Not real.
Okay, next time I'm going to Target. All right, guys. Well, this wraps up this discussion. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have any questions or you have a suggestion for a future podcast, you can write us. Our email address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com, and we will talk to you again really soon.
If you're a Tech Stuff fan, be sure to check us out on Twitter. TechStuffHSW is our handle, and you can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TechStuffHSW.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. And be sure to check out the new Tech Stuff blog, now on the HowStuffWorks homepage. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.